Hello, welcome to the Cosmic Shed. My name is Laura, and I used to have great fun presenting from the shed. I now live in a faraway land, but I've dropped by today to wish you all a very happy Christmas when it comes. Now, let's see who's through door 22.
Hey everyone, this is Ty. Andrew has asked me to introduce today's special Shed Vent episode. It's an interview I did with Mark Bernardin, who's an American journalist, TV and comic book writer. Some of you might know Mark from the podcast that he does with Kevin Smith called Fat Man Beyond, where they talk about all things geeky and sometimes Batman related. He's also just recently launched a new podcast with Trisha Helfer, who was one of our other guests on the Cosmic Shed, where they're doing a retrospective look at all the episodes of Battlestar Galactica. So if you like Trisha and you like Mark, definitely check out their new podcast, Battlestar Galacticast, that's out now. Mark was a film editor for the Los Angeles Times and a senior editor for the Hollywood Reporter and Entertainment Weekly, so he knows his film stuff, really. The man is all knowledgeable. He's as big a film geek as you could hope to meet. He was also a staff writer on the sci-fi series Alphas, and also the new Stephen King anthology series Castle Rock. He's currently working on a Jason Bourne spin-off series called Treadstone. When I spoke to him, it was in relation to a book that I was writing that's out now, Born to be Bad, talking to the greatest villains in action cinema. And I just wanted to talk to a like-minded film geek about their favourite movie villains, and inevitably the conversation got on to much more geekier things.
For me, as a guy who watches a lot of movies, the thing that I'm always looking for out of a villain is, what was your plan if the hero didn't show up? I absolutely know what Hans Gruber was after. Like, and if John McClane isn't in that building, here's what would have happened. He wins. Like, he gets what he was... Like, his plan makes sense. I want my villains, I want my antagonists to have agency in and of themselves, but to also have some purpose that intrinsically wires into what the hero is after. The great villain should be smarter than your hero, and is just beset by the complication of your hero. The best villain is smarter than your average cop. Like, a successful villain has outsmarted the cops a lot, because they're not idiots. Like, I've never been a fan of just psychopath for psychopath's sake.
Yeah.
You know, like the Red Dragons, the Buffalo Bills, like they're okay. But I'm here for the Hannibal Lecters, you know, who even though got caught is still the smartest person on the stage.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite films has always been Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I spoke to Paul Freeman earlier in the week, actually, and we were talking about Belloc and how Belloc is the mirror image to Indiana Jones, but then he's much more refined, much more smooth around the edges. He speaks Hobbito, which...
Who doesn't speak? If only you spoke Hobbito.
But at the same time, Raiders of the Lost Ark is one of those films where even if Indiana Jones hadn't rocked up, the Nazis would have still ended up melting their faces.
I know. That is one of my favorite things about Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I love dearly, but Indiana Jones is ineffectual in that movie. Like, all he does is make the Nazis... They would not have used a boat.
He upsets their schedule.
Yeah. Like he's...
Or hastens their schedule.
Either way. But yes, they would have, like, and yeah, like, they know what they want. They know exactly how to get it. They get it. Mm-hmm. The Nazis win in Raiders of the Lost Ark, or God wins in Raiders of the Lost Ark, but Indiana Jones does not.
I've spoken to a lot of British actors, your Julian Glovers, your David Warners, Paul Freemans. What is it about British actors that gets them cast in American movies as bad guys, or not necessarily as British bad guys? As Paul Freeman told me, he's been cast a lot as German commandants.
I feel like it's the American Revolution.
Oh.
It goes way back to the foundation. Like, it's... There is a direct line between, you know, the British, the Redcoats are coming, to every bad guy is going to be British. It's handy semiotics.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, they sound different. They're way more charming. They're probably handsomer. Of course they're going to be bad guys, because we can't make them good guys, then it's not fair.
But now we've got a lot of British actors being the American good guys. Your Benedict Cumberbatches, your Christian Bales. Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
The Brits seem to be stealing your Andrew Garfields. Tom Holland.
We have ceded
Spider-Man's
our
British.
Entire superhero economy to the Brits.
You're welcome. We need it after Brexit. We need some sort of
like, we get Captain America because I feel like that's the one you can't actually cast as a Brit.
It's like James Bond. You can't have an American as James Bond. Yeah, you can't have a Brit as Captain America.
Yeah, but everybody else is
open
to
the is on the table. Especially Superman. He's an alien. He doesn't have to be American.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, the British villain is the first example of Hollywood xenophobia. In the, like, it's okay to hate these people. Like, yeah. It's the same reason why for, like, the 80s it was Russians or, you know, like, Vietnamese, weirdly enough. Yeah. Like, all right, we're just going to go back to Vietnam because Rambo needs somebody to fight. You know, and then it's going to be, like, the my favorite little sub-niche was in the late 80s, early 90s of the Jamaican voodoo cocaine posse.
Like in Predator 2.
Like in Predator 2. Yeah. And, like and another Steven Seagal movie, I want to say, was, like... Hard to Kill.
Yeah.
Maybe also like, oh, okay, sure, because that's a thing that could be bad guys. Why not?
It's like the late 80s, 90s fascination all of a sudden with the Yakuza.
Yeah.
Like in Showdown in Little Tokyo and Black Rain, Cary Hiroyuki Tanaga suddenly got a lot of bad guy roles for like a 4-year period.
And I was like, you guys, look at all this money. I know Sean Connery just wanted me to be in a movie. Why wouldn't I be as bad guy Yakuza?
I'm trying to track down all the remaining terrorists from Die Hard. So I've spoken to Ao Leong,
the great Ao Leong,
who is sadly suffering from he had a stroke.
Oh really?
He can't move one half of his body.
Oh.
We spoke for hours. He's so lovely. And Andreas Vinicevski, who plays Carl's brother, he's also Necros, the bad guy in The Living Daylights as well.
Right, okay.
And I spoke to Dennis Hayden, who's Eddie, the one on the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm meant to be speaking to Clarence Gilliard Jr., who's Theo. And all the rest, there's no contact details for any of them. Your Heinrichs, your Marcos.
Right.
They're all spread to the wind.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I first moved to L.A., seeing that building, it's like, there's Nakatomi Plaza. And my wife hates that movie, so she's like, what are you talking about? He's fucking Nakatomi.
Yeah, how does your marriage work?
That's
what do you do at Christmas time?
I mean, I watch Die Hard and, like, The West Wing, and she's like, what are we watching? Can we watch, you know, like, can we watch It's a Wonderful Life? I guess. I mean, there's no shootouts.
It's fine.
As far as movies go,
let's
it's all
compromise with Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, which she also won't do. I'm like, come on! But yeah, just seeing that building. And then I went to go see Fox, 20th Century Fox, has a movie club.
Okay.
That they sort of invite certain members of press and staff and whatever to come to the Zanuck Theater on the lot, and they will just screen old movies in the Fox Library.
That's awesome.
And so one Christmas, like 4 years ago, they screened Die Hard. And watching Die Hard on the Fox lot with Nakatomi Plaza in the background is the most surreal thing. This is not possible.
Do you feel Fox and Bruce Willis have completely forgotten what Die Hard's all about? And I know Kevin's issues with Bruce Willis are well documented.
Yeah.
But do you think Bruce realizes he's kind of has forgotten how to play John McClane or what John McClane is meant to be?
I mean, I feel like that was a movie that did not actually beg for a sequel. You know,
no.
Like it's you know, right guy in the wrong place at the wrong time should never happen twice.
But sure, for a Hollywood sequel, we'll let it go.
Right. Yeah. But like, I just think they ran out of places to put him that made sense. Like, they forgot what made that movie work, which was claustrophobia and character and complications and an organic feeling to the way the villain and the hero had to... Like, everything gelled and clicked in the right way. And it's once you're... And I even like Die Hard with a Vengeance.
I love Die Hard. I think it's very good.
Yeah.
Because they do something different. They partner him up with Samuel L. Jackson. I know it was meant to be just a thriller called Simon Says or Simple Simon. But again, he's always running to catch up.
Right.
And he's out of his league.
And like the complications of New York.
Yeah.
Are interesting. Of
getting like, 20 blocks in, you know, 10 minutes or something.
Like some of that really works. And then they go to Russia and I'm like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, the hacker thing. I'm like, why is John McClane against a hacker?
Yeah.
Like why? Why?
And the idea of doing a Die Hard Year One doesn't make any sense because his origin story is Die Hard.
Right. Like, before that, he's just a cop.
He's just a cop. He becomes John McClane, super cop.
Yeah.
Like,
the last thing I really want is the Rogue One of Die Hard.
Yeah.
Which, you know, ends with John McClane getting on a plane to L.A. to go see his wife and
with
kids
a bear.
With a giant bear.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that.
About flying.
Yeah. Like, I just took down a perp. At the end of the day, I so rarely need to know how the heroes I love got to be the heroes I love.
Yeah.
I just need them to be the heroes I love.
I'm kind of fascinated by Lucasfilm's policy of hiring young English actresses that place next to each other. My dad probably wouldn't be able to tell them. I love Felicity Jones, I love Daisy Ridley, Amelia Clark, all great.
Yeah.
They're not stretching the casting pool.
And for the longest time, you know, I was convinced that Felicity Jones was playing Leia. Like, I was like, oh, I get it. Rogue One is just, here's the story of how Leia Organa goes from, like, posh princess to rebel leader. Like, this is where she earns her bones. This is the mission that she takes on herself to execute, getting the fucking plans, as we know she does, from one, like, why not? That's cool. Also, she
how
looks
she
exactly
from being
like
a princess to a rebel leader.
Yeah, like how anybody decides that, oh yeah, she should be a general, not just by having survived everything, but actually from showing some battlefield.
It would have been interesting. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, like,
actually, you theorized that on Fat Man and Batman.
I did.
For a while,
and it was like,
you
know, it was one of those, well, I like the movie I got, but there's the other movie in my head that I wanted and didn't get. But, you know, like, because she's a dead ringer. Because they're all dead ringers for Carrie Fisher when she was 19 years old. I love the idea of a movie in which the Empire isn't inherently bad for the people who are living there. It's like, what else am I going to do? It's where the jobs are.
That's where what Battlefront 2, the new game's meant to be all about. It's like, if you live on a prosperous Imperial world, these rebels blowing up military bases, these are terrorists. That's what.
Yeah, you know, like, at the end of the day, the Empire is a pretty well-run organization.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have supply problems, they have a pretty decent workforce, you know. They're not actually trucking in slavery. They're just, people get paid.
Yeah.
They come to work. I'm sure they have decent benefits. You know, like health, dental. Like, they look, by and large, happy to be there. Unless you're within the orbit of weird religious icon guy who chokes people with his minds. But if you just take out a guy on, like, a distant planet, this is all good.
Yeah.
I passed the psyche eval. It's okay.
It's fine. I'm going to shoot that many people.
Yeah, like, we've already, you know, broken this world, so alright, I'm just showing up to work.
Yeah.
And driving a shuttle. It's fine.
Oh,
I wonder if Lucasfilm would let me write that book. Like, Sunny Days in the Empire, just, hey, it's great, you guys.
Well, what film, what film would you pitch, Kathy Kennedy?
You know, I feel like Rogue One is, for whatever flaws the movie has, is the perfect kind of distillation of that thing.
Yeah.
The, like, here's a thing we know happens. It's integral to the story as we need to tell it. We've never told it.
Mm.
And so, and there's a drama in there. I have faith that Kathy Kennedy, right, like, she is the keeper of this stuff.
She knows her stuff. I think one I've always wanted to see is kind of on the back of what you said, like, if you live in an Imperial world, because you have your generals that defect to the rebellion, like General Nadine and Jedi. So what would make a group of Imperial officers or troops defect to the rebellion, and why would the rebellion ever trust these Imperial troops coming to go, you know what, those guys are insane, we're going to join you guys.
Do you have, like, amnesty? Is there,
exactly,
like, an alliance
what
amnesty program?
What if we give you this Star Destroyer? Red October in the Star Wars universe.
Hell yeah. Like stealing a Star Destroyer and then bringing it to the,
Rebel
Alliance.
Going, what could you do with this?
I brought you a present.
Yeah.
could I have a new identity, please? But they were talking about in Rogue One with Donnie Yen's character, the fall of Jeddah.
Yeah.
You know, the, here's where we mine the crystals that make the lightsabers. Like, we are, we have affinity for the Force, but we are not Jedi, but we're still the protectors of this thing, and we're all gone now. So what happened to that? Like, if that was the last stronghold of the Jedi, how did that fall? like, show me the Jericho story. Yeah. In the Star Wars universe. Like, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Like, I'd watch the last siege of Jeddah and who gets out alive and who remains and what happens to the Jedi.
It's
after.
Not Forrest Whitaker. He just decides to...
I'm just going to stare into this maelstrom here. This is cool.
Sandstorms. Love them.
Yeah. I could get on the ship, right? No.
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 No. No. You guys go ahead.
That's fine. I can also run on my metal legs, but not gonna. Because I'm a drama queen.
Thanks, Ty and Mark. As always, there'll be links to everything discussed in this episode on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. Not least, a link to where you can buy Ty's book, Born to be Bad. You know I promised you a Tron treat? Well, there's a strong hint as to what that is in this very episode. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.